Hello, everyone. Thank you for checking out this special episode of Really Dicey. This is Manny, and I am here with...
Emmett Byrne. I'm the creative director of Cubicle 7.
And today we're going to talk about The Broken Weave. I love post-apocalyptic tales. And correct me if I'm wrong, this is a post-apocalyptic tale using the 5e rule system. Am I correct?
Yeah, so the full spiel that we go with, a post-apocalyptic tragic fantasy setting for 5th edition. So there's plenty in there. it's a bit of a mouthful.
Yeah, I'm enjoying that Cubicle 7 has been releasing these 5e standalone books almost. Mm. There's A Life Well Lived, for example, which is totally different in theme and ideas. And we'll get into that one day. But The Broken Weave, if I may ask, what was the inspiration behind making this campaign, the setting?
Yeah, so you know, for the other 5e stuff, like Uncharted Journeys, obviously we did Adventures of Middle-earth, the first ever 5th edition Lord of the Rings game, and travel was a big part of that. So Uncharted Journeys came out from that. It's kind of setting agnostic. You can use it in any 5e campaign setting. Same with Life Well Lived is for any 5e setting, your traditional 5e fantasy setting. Broken Weave is its own campaign setting world. So that's kind of what differentiates it from the other books that we have there. They can be used in any D&D campaign. This is specifically its own setting. The idea came about... God, I don't even want to think. 2019, I think I pitched the idea to the rest of the team. Late in 2019, we'll say. I pitched the idea of this post-apocalyptic tragic fantasy setting. One of the things I've always, you know, been interested in is, okay, well, what happens to a magical world if the magic goes away or the gods go away? You know, what does that look like if people are so reliant on, you know, that and the whole society is built around, like, if you take something like Faerun from, you know, Forgotten Realms, what happens if the gods die and magic goes away? You know, it's this kind of magical apocalypse. So that's where the idea kind of came from first. Heavily inspired by things like, you know, Dark Souls, Shadow of the Colossus. I was reading The Dark Tower at the time as well, where time and distance are fluid. So there's plenty of that in there as well. But, that's kind of where it came from initially. That was the original pitch for it. And then as we got into it more, it was developed a bit over the pandemic and things like that, you know, and where we were actually isolated from each other. So there was this setting where people were isolated. So I think, you know, it feels like a dark fantasy, post-apocalyptic, tragic fantasy setting. a major part of it is actually hope and community and people working together. So it very much focuses on that. Like, the apocalypse has happened and there's nothing you can do about it. It's about building something new and what do you make of the world, as it is, and how do you kind of come together as a community, and how do you build something that'll last longer in this world where everything decays and rots.
And before we go talk about all the player options and game master options and so forth, I have to say that the art for this really catches your eye. And it's interesting because, so when I first started The Broken Weave, when I heard about it, it sounded like, oh, this is almost like a post Ragnarok, tale, you know, but it doesn't seem to have a very strong, Norse influence in the artwork or any cultural influence, or, you know, I couldn't tell, like, where was this inspired by? Could you tell us a little bit about the art direction for this book?
Yeah, so one of the kind of exciting things about this is, you know, we came up with the idea, and then we have an in-house team of artists, I think we had three or four at the time, and one external artist, Clara Marie Moran, who we work with heavily on this as well. And with this, we kind of, rather than what we do in a lot of books, is we write, you know, an adventure, or we write a campaign setting, and then we brief the art. With Broken Weave, a lot of the time, we're like, hey, we have these ideas. We need some, like, gribbly monsters for it. Can you do some concepts? And we'll write something for it. So there's a lot of really, a lot of the world building in it happened from the art team kind of going and doing concept work and things like that, taking, okay, well, here's some traditional Dungeons and Dragons creatures or themes or whatever. You know, what does that look like if the magic inside it becomes corrupted and twisted and things like that? And then, you know, people drew on their own inspirations. You know, we have one of our artists, JG, he's Irish, he's based over here. Sam Manley, he's based in Germany, but he's from the UK. We had Daniel Kovac at the time, who's from Hungary. So, like, there's the mother caring creature in the book that you'll see. She's kind of like this big gangly creature with like little like child versions of herself almost hanging off her. I think I'm fairly certain Daniel based that off of like a Hungarian folktale. So there's quite this kind of multicultural influences as well. Clara Marie is French when she came in. Runesale, who worked on it, is in the US, but it's kind of I think lived in Sweden and stuff like that. So there's a lot of different influences from different places on it. The art direction for us was it was a challenge to find exactly where we wanted to land, because we didn't want it to be brown and black and gray and stuff, you know, because it is post-apocalyptic, but we wanted it to have, you know, more vibrance in it, you know. So there's influences from things like Annihilation, the movie and stuff. You can see some of their work that's a really vibrant blues. The cover, Alvaro Jimenez did the cover on the screen for us. It has like that, obviously that really strong pink and the cyan teal kind of in it. So it was trying to make sure that we were introducing that color to it, and that we were building the setting in the artwork. So when you look at the clothes that the characters wear, or the objects that they have, and the memoria and talismans that they have, that they kind of tell a story. And that was something, actually, one of the elements of the game is this idea of memoria, which are these trinkets that you can, that people hold on to, and they have like these trapped memories, or they remind them of someone, and it helps them, you know, if decay, which is this entropic force, if it comes in and starts to erase their memories, the memoria helps them remember who they are, or special people in their lives and things like that. But a lot of that actually came about from the artwork. A lot of the characters had these little things hanging off them, and little bits, and, you know, and broken pieces of glass or beads or broken weapons or jewelry or bones or whatever. And that kind of, that manifested as the memoria, which became an actual setting element and a gameplay mechanic. So that was really cool. You know, there was a really kind of collaborative feel to that between the art team and all the writers and everything like that. So that's that was a big part of it, and trying to find the feel for it, because it has a bit of a looser feel than a lot of our work. At times, you know, there's plenty of pieces that are high rendered, but it is a bit looser to give that feeling of decay and things kind of eroding away.
And I you mentioned the colors of that was used for this for the artwork, and yeah, I agree with you that. So this doesn't feel like this is the finality. This, like, after you play this, it's over. Everything's over. Like Morgborg or some other games like that, but this feels like more like a new chapter, and everything is like out the window when it comes to what you know about fantasy. You know, things don't work well, magic doesn't work well, and so forth. So I think you did a great job with that.
I mean, that one of the things for us is with something like Morgborg, which is a really fun game, you know, but it's so hopeless. You know, and it was like, okay, we need that hope, we need that light. And, you know, I think for us on the, you know, the writing team and the art team, you know, we've plenty of grim dark properties that we work on, so we wanted something that was more about, you know, coming together, building a community, that kind of thing. And that it was, okay, this thing has happened, how do you move on, rather than it's all hopeless, just try and survive and you're kind of this terrible person. So that was a big part of it for us.
So going back a little bit about the setting again, what are the, I don't want to say the big bads, like, so I know environment definitely sounds like it's one of the difficulties that the players may encounter, but is there like dark forces? Is there like anything besides the environment that players have to worry about when they play in this game?
Yeah. So I suppose the big challenge, you know, in the game, the idea is it was a traditional high fantasy setting, like you might know from Forgotten Realms or Dragonlance or any, you know, traditional fantasy setting or high magic setting, or, you know, Lord of the Rings or whatever. and then Magic broke effectively, and it's become almost like this. We kind of thought of it like a little bit like the radiation that you get in Fallout, in the Fallout video games. Is like this radiation that permeates everything and twists everything and corrupts it. So anything that had magic in it is this corrupting force, and it's kind of spread out through the whole world. And because it's a fantasy setting, there's magic in basically everything, including the characters and the creatures and things like that. So it's kind of it's twisted and corrupted. Anyone who heavily relied on magic, like your necromancers or just your regular wizards, or you know your chosen paladin in this magical golden armor, they've been corrupted by the magic breaking effectively, and so they kind of become these enemies in it. There is no army of evil. There's no one person or thing behind it, and surviving in the world is a big challenge, and that involves like these creatures and monsters that you encounter, or just like regular creatures that have been twisted or trying to find food and survive. And we do have these creatures called Titans, which are, you know, you don't know the origin of, but it's, you know, alluded they maybe were servants of the gods or may have been gods themselves. And they become these twisted monsters. Like they are effectively like walking natural disasters. They're like your kind of Godzilla type thing that it comes through and just destroys everything. So there's two of them in the core book, which is the Rotbringer and the Dreamer, which is a really, really cool one. And then we have an adventure that's included with the GM screen, which is the Sun-Cursed Knight, which is they were a paladin of the sun god, you know, before the breaking. And their armor and their magic and everything caused them to become this big corrupted monstrosity. And so they have that tragedy and the sadness to it, which is something that, you know, I've always loved about things like Dark Souls. You know, it's not just this monster for the sake of it. It does have there's a story to it as why it got to this point and why it's, you know, it's terrifying but also kind of pitiable as well. So there's plenty of threats out there, but there is no, hey, there's an army of orcs coming to kill you, or you know, things like that.
So what can players be exactly in this game? Being that this using the 5e system from Wizards of the Coast. I assume, of course, the typical classes and subclasses you could find in the Dungeons and Dragons books. But I'm curious what this book offers for our player options.
Yeah, so with Brokenwing, because it's such a different setting, there are lineages, which is your D&D races, and then we have six new classes. And the actual game itself, so let's start with the lineages. So you have these, there's the four elemental lineages, which are Elf, Dwarf, Human, Halfling, which are like, okay, well, these are your traditional D&D ones. And they all had like an inherent magic to them. And when the magic broke and the gods were killed or died, and the magic in them became corrupted and became this curse. So each of them has this curse. So you have your lineage that you pick, and then as your decay, which is this entropic force that permeates the world, as that builds up, they become more and more twisted, and eventually they become these monstrosities, which are stat blocks in the back of the book. So like the dwarves, they have the curse of flame, which is, you know, dwarves are always these artisans and creators, and they had that spark of creativity. And when magic broke, they kind of effectively, they are cursed with writer's block, essentially. So they can't create anything new, and they've started to forget how to make things they could make. But they are, you know, the children of flame, that was their original element, and as they come corrupted, they become these like molten monsters that we call crucibles, which are these kind of like grotesque things covered in flame and lava and things like that. So we have that for the lineages. So each of them has the curse. So you have those four ones, and then we have the Forgotten, which is a little bit of a catch-all so that people can use it in any other setting. So they could have been, maybe they were dragonborn, or they were, you know, kobolds or tieflings or what have you, anything like that. So they are, when you pick them, you can pick from a couple of different traits that they might have, which will help you like build, okay, well, this used to be a dragonborn, or people would have known it as a dragonborn, but now they have like these kind of weird scales that people aren't sure about. They have like a red tint to them or whatever. But their curses, as decay builds up, they just become intangible. Until eventually, when they reach the top, they just cease to exist, and everyone forgets they ever existed, which obviously is very tragic. So those are the lineages that we have, and then we have six classes. Because the game is more about survival, exploration, and rebuilding. You know, these are new classes specific to Broken Weave. They have less of a combat focus than Dungeons and Dragons. There's still plenty of combat because there's monsters to fight and things, you know, but we have things like there's a speaker whose whole thing is they go between communities that we call havens, and they try and build relationships, and they talk people around and things like that. And the seeker who goes out and looks for lost ruins and things like that. And then we have the warden who you see on the cover, the in the helmet and the shield. They're not a fighter. They're a warden. Their thing is they protect people. They're not going out looking for fights. They are actually there to protect people. So that's a big part of what they do. The Harrowed is that they manipulate decay. So they're as close as we get to a magic user, because none of these classes can use magic or choose to use magic, because magic is corrupting. Some of them have very high level abilities that verge on magic, but come with a cost, which is the decay. And the Harrowed is the closest to that, where they have, you know, spell-like abilities, and they take decay into themselves and turn it into this power. But, you know, obviously it has a cost on them. So those are the kind of the character options that you get. We use, if you've read A Life Well Lived, we use a life path system in this, where you roll to determine, you know, your lineages, your place in society, all that kind of stuff, and these experiences that you had. And as you do that, it gives you a place in your haven, which is a massive part of the game, as you make a haven together. But as you roll, it'll be like, okay, well, you know, you were sick as a child, but you got over it. You have plus one constitution. You're used to, you know, dealing with that. Or, you know, you're apprenticed to the smith in the town, so you have proficiency with crafters' tools and things. So they give you a lot of maybe the background and the race bonuses that you would have gotten in standard D&D, but it's built up more naturally, and you have all these ties and connections to people in your haven and in your home. So that's it feels more natural, and immediately when you get to the end of it, you have a really fleshed out character, and you have connections to people in the group, and you have connections to people in your haven. There's plenty in there. It is still D&D, you know. Like, one of our things is, you know, D&D is a good system, and we don't want to break it. It works the way it is. We're not going in trying to fix D&D, but things that we do, we kind of layer on top, or we tweak slightly. You know, there's the journey rules, there's new actions. Inspiration is gone and replaced with hope, which is like a shared party pool. So everyone can draw on it, and you can do more with it than you could with just flat inspiration in standard 5e. And we've new rules for like dying and injuries and things like that to help reinforce the setting as this, you know, hard to survive place, because there's no magic, so there's no magical healing, you know. So it becomes much more of a challenge for people. The character options, there's plenty in there. We have talents in there, which are kind of like feats. People know, but they're a little bit weaker. You get them more regularly. There's plenty in there for in relation to character options, and, you know, unique equipment that fits the broken world, as well as like your standard D&D equipment, because people don't really know as well how to make armor and shields and everything. So you might have like a rusted longsword instead of a longsword, you know, things like that.
Hmm. Well, that's good to hear. That's one of the things I liked about the Adventures of Middle Earth 5e books you produced some years ago, that there was no magic there. So it made things much more difficult, especially when healings, magical healings, went out the window. Now, I want to talk to you more about the mechanics, some of the new mechanics you have there, especially for like decay. But I have to admit that harvesting monsters is something that comes up in any game I play in a fantasy setting. So what can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so this is another thing, I suppose, that it is a fairly substantial change to 5e, is that there's no gold and silver, because it's this post-apocalyptic society. So people, you know, they want to survive together, so they work together. So we have a system that's, you know, resources and components. And resources is like an abstract term that could be food or could be swords or, you know, building supplies, that kind of thing. So harvesting monsters, you can get resources from, or you can get unique components which help you. One of the cool things is you can take your rusted sword and you can kind of make it magical if you find the right creature. So some of the rules we have in there is that crafting and harvesting, so you can harvest from creatures and the world and get these unique components, and then you can take that to a maker, which is one of the classes who are essentially a smith, and they can make something for you. They can modify your equipment based on, you know, the creature that you've harvested from. Like, there's creatures with these kind of shimmering hides, and if you turn that into armor, you're harder to hit. But, you know, there's magic in a lot of these, which means that they're just decay, so there is a risk to them. You know, where potentially you could either the maker or you wearing it could have your decay could increase from trying to make it or actually wear it. So that was another one as well, as kind of a more of a survival feel to it. You know, being able to go out and harvest creatures and animals and things like that was something that we wanted to do. So the system it's a neat little system in there. I devoted maybe like 5 to 10 pages to it, and then we built on that in one of our recent Kickstarters, Crafting and Alchemy, which has a whole crafting system in it and for harvesting monsters and stuff. So we were working on all these together: Life Well Lived, Crafting and Alchemy, Broken Weave. So there's a lot of and Uncharted Journeys. So there's a lot of systems that everything kind of works together, or you can build out a bit more in it. Things like we have downtime activities and campcraft activities in Broken Weave and in A Life Well Lived and in Crafting and Alchemy, which are these things that you know, campcraft activities you can do when you're taking a long rest, which might be like, hey, I hunt for some food so that we can have some food, and then downtime are like the D&D downtime activities, but more structure to it and how you do it, and it doesn't take as long. You know, one of the things that I was bounced off a little bit in the standard 5e downtime is it's not really appealing for anyone, because everything takes so long to do. Whereas downtime in this, it's like, okay, you have a week, you can go and make a sword kind of thing, you know, make a certain amount of tests and then you can do that. And then we have these longer seasonal activities, which are over the course of months and years, you can make this really long project, which could be build a wall around your haven or go out in search of a monster to hunt and kill or, you know, build a community or have a family, that kind of thing. So and then the crafting and the harvesting ties into those as well, because they're activities that you can do within that gets like this little ecosystem where everything kind of works together.
So as for Dungeon Masters, does this book contain pretty much your standard set of tools like a bestiary, maps, things like that?
Yeah, so it's an all-in-one contained book, so it has everything the GM and the player needs as well. For the GM, and I guess for the player, there's a whole section on the broken world. What does society look like? How do people interact? Because it's quite an alien world, so we want to show people, like, okay, well, here's how people live day to day. And then we have about 20 or 30 unique locations that you can use in Broken Weave. There's no map in there because Broken Weave, the world is essentially unmappable because time and distance are fluid. So things move around. So, you know, we give advice in there. Like, if you're doing a map, like, the easy thing is write some things on a piece of paper and stick it down on a board. And it's like, this is near, this is far, this is very far away. You know, it's that kind of level of it. You're not actually like, you don't have a hex where you're marking things down. So there's tons of unique locations that GMs can drop into their world. We have a starting location to, if people want, called Guardian's Lament, which is a pre-made haven. And all the other locations are built in relation to that. You can replace that with your own haven. You can take the locations and put them into your game however they fit. So we try to make them as interesting and flavorful as possible. Every location has a little adventure hook that the GM can build off, you know, how to use in their campaign, what the people might want there, or how they might interact with your haven and things like that. We have a bestiary, I think maybe about 40 pages possibly, which has kind of creatures like flora and fauna in it, and then it has monsters with a capital M. So the fauna is, you know, just plants and things you might find in the world, and we have a nice neat little table that's a fauna generator that you can, like, flowers you can generate or plants you can generate to find in the world for the GM when they're describing them. And then we have the fauna in the game, so creatures and stuff that are common to the broken world that they maybe people wouldn't recognize, or they might recognize twisted from a 5e setting maybe. And then we have monsters. So we have a collection of monsters in there, like I was saying, the Crucible, the corrupted forms of all the basic lineages. And then we just have other, like, kind of nightmare fuel creatures in there. One of the cool things in it as well is we have this this section called Breaking Monsters, which is the idea that you can take any 5th edition monster or creature, roll on this table and give it these traits, and it becomes a Broken Weave monster. So they have, like, these kind of tragic vibes to them, or these kind of twisted corruptions or mutations and things like, oh, they just they're constantly crying or constantly whimpering and things like that. Like, so they're just kind of maybe flavorful things that are just a bit creepy and unsettling, or it can be they have extra limbs or tentacles and things. So there's ways you can just apply those to any 5e monster. So immediately you have hundreds and hundreds of monsters that you can use in the game. But yeah, we've included plenty of our own design in there. And then the two Titans that I was talking about as well, which are these kind of, you know, CR 30 level threats that you kind of just want to get out of the way of rather than actually face down and fight. So yeah, there's plenty in there for the GM as well. We have the GM screen, which obviously has a three-panel screen with Alvaro's incredible artwork on it. And then the inside, some tables that, you know, encapsulate the rules changes with Broken Weave. And it comes with an adventure called The Titan's March, which is, this is how we see a Broken Weave adventure, which is this, the Sun-Cursed Knight is coming towards your haven and it's going to wipe it out, to completely wipe it out. So these are CR 30 creatures. You're supposed to start as a level one character. So it's, how do you stop it? You know, go and find out, try and discover the truth about it, discover maybe a way to stop it, or decide, okay, we actually can't stop it. Let's up sticks and move our haven somewhere else. So it's it's a really, really good adventure written by Eleanor Hingley, who's an excellent writer. She's written for us on a ton of stuff, really nice. So, there's plenty in there for the GM, everything they should need to run a Broken Weave campaign.
This sounds fantastic. If I may ask before we wrap up, what is it about post-apocalyptic tales, like, or even stories like Dark Souls and Shadow of the Colossus? What is it about these stories, even though it seems like really dark stories, that we keep being drawn to?
Yeah, it's hard to, you know, for me, I've always been big into horror, and like, if I'm running a D&D campaign, you can bet there's going to be zombies and undead and vampires and liches and things like that. But I think it's kind of what I was saying earlier, you know, there's people who enjoy, sorry, that sounds really judgmental, you know, at times, because I would be the same, you know, they want that grim, dark fantasy experience. And to kind of just be mired in this terribleness, because it's different, it's escapism. And then for something like this with Broken Weave, it's okay, you have all this terrible stuff, but it is about, you know, coming together and building something new. And I think for me anyway, it's always about overcoming it. You know, it's rather than, oh my God, aren't people awful and don't we do horrible things to each other, which is obviously true, but it's okay, well, aren't, you know, isn't it amazing when people come together to protect each other and look after each other and try and build something, you know? And that's it for me, you know, it is actually, you know, about people coming together and trying to build something new and something better, you know, which I think came to the fore obviously a lot during the pandemic when plenty of work was done on this. It's like, oh, we're very isolated from each other, but you're still trying to keep that human contact and, you know, try and survive and live your life. But yeah, that's it for me. It is always about, it's kind of overcoming that, you know, that's the personal stories that you get in it. You know, I think that's the thing. It's the world has ended. The apocalypse has happened. Maybe you failed to do, or maybe your characters from a different campaign failed to stop the apocalypse. And now it's okay, well, their ancestors have to survive and try and make a life now, and try and build something. And that's why you have things like a lot of the stuff in Broken Weave is build community, find love, that kind of stuff. It's all personal stories and about character growth and that kind of thing.
Well, is this out now on this is out on DriveThruRPG? Is it out?
It is. Yeah, yeah. So it's available on DriveThru. We had the Kickstarter campaign last year. It's available on DriveThru now. The core book and the GM screen. It is available for physical pre-order on our website. Anything you buy physical or pre-order, you'll get the PDF straight away. It's currently finalizing the print file, so the print files are with the printer. We've gotten some samples last week to take a look at, which is very, very exciting. So I think we're expecting it to be sent out to people in Q3 of this year. Don't quote me on that, but I'm fairly sure that's what we're looking at. Sooner would be better, but we are beholden to the shipping the shipping gods. but yeah, it's available for pre-order now. You'll get the PDF straight away, or you can buy the PDF from DriveThru. And you can start playing straight away, and then it'll be in stores by Q3.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about The Broken Weave from Cubicle 7. And viewers, I will put a link in the description below so you can check it out at DriveThruRPG and also at the website. And thank you for watching. Stay safe out there. We'll see you next time.